This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Wendy Gillette. President Biden spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and will also talk with other leaders in the region. The Hamas-led Gaza Health Ministry says the Palestinian death toll has surpassed 8,000 and humanitarian needs are growing.
This morning, the UN raised alarm that civil order is starting to break down inside Gaza. Thousands of people storming their warehouses and distribution centers in a desperate need for wheat, flour, and hygiene supplies.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan spoke on CBS's Face the Nation.
There should be humanitarian pauses to get hostages out, potentially to get aid in, and we will continue to work toward that end.
The United Auto Workers Union has reached a tentative deal with Stellantis as its strike stretches into 6 weeks. WWJ reporter Jeff Gilbert.
The deal will mean $19 billion in investments and 5,000 new jobs, says UAW President Sean Fain. It will reverse the closing of a plant in Illinois and prevent the closing of plants in Michigan and Ohio.
The days of low-wage, unstable jobs at the Big Three are coming to an end.
Like Ford, workers at Stellantis will return to their jobs while they vote on the deal. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
There's one fewer Republican candidate for president. Former Vice President Mike Pence has dropped out. CBS's Jake Rosen.
He had not yet qualified for the next presidential debate in Miami in November. And I think that's a really important thing to consider. Clearly, he didn't have the donations. And unlike other candidates, he definitely decided to bow out of the race.
The Arizona Diamondbacks came back with a decisive win over the Texas Rangers after a loss in Game 1.
2, Moreno hits it in the air to left center field. Tavares and Carter on the move. That ball is gone! Gabriel Moreno hits it out. And the Diamondbacks strike first in Game 2.
Fox Sports with the call, the final score, 9-1. Denver got hit with its heaviest early snowstorm in decades. CBS News Colorado TV reporter Olivia Young spoke to stranded travelers.
Now, they have rebooked onto a morning flight, but are left to sleep either at the airport or to try to find a hotel. And sadly, we know that this couple are not the only ones being delayed by the storm. So if you have an upcoming flight, you're on the way to the airport, make sure you are triple checking that flight and being extra careful on the roads.
And the same system is bringing winter weather to the plains. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Family farm advocates in rural western Wisconsin are pushing back on concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, as the livestock industry becomes more concentrated. But local officials are also digging in. Here's Mark Moran.
Hundreds of residents of Pierce County, nestled along the Wisconsin-Minnesota border, are concerned about a proposed expansion of CAFOs in the county. Danny Akinson, with a group called Grassroots Organizing Western Wisconsin, or GRO, asked county officials to put a moratorium on CAFO expansion.
That moratorium did not pass. In its place, the county decided to create a groundwater advisory committee, which will be studying the effects that CAFOs can have on our groundwater.
Similar efforts at halting CAFO expansion have failed in other Midwest and Plains states, where advisory groups have also been formed and where CAFOs have the potential to pollute groundwater. Large corporate-owned farms say their operations are more efficient than small family farms and are simply meeting a growing demand. Akinson says advocates are trying to work with local officials to at least slow CAFO expansion. Known for dairy farms and cheese curds, residents of Pierce County towns such as River Falls, Spring Valley, and Ellsworth want to preserve the rural, pristine way of life the area is known for.
A lot of people come here looking for that rural way of life that you would not get in a place like the Twin Cities, for example.
CAFOs have been cited for a host of environmental problems as they expand across the country. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Mark Moran. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
The journey to a smoke-free life can be difficult. Kick the habit with the help of Vape Walkie. Vape Walkie isn't just a vape shop, they're a community, and their knowledgeable staff can assist you in finding the perfect products to suit your needs. With a wide variety of vaping products at the best prices, they cater to everyone from novices to cloud enthusiasts. Mention this ad and join the rewards program to receive 100 free points when you sign up.
Vape Walkie, 215 Oakton Avenue, Suite C in Pewaukee.
Call 262-696-6620 or log on to vapewalkie.com to find more.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
Hello, this is Lou Ann Bird, your host for Bird on a Wire, where we have conversations of civility, hope, and action. And I'm very happy to have with me my guest, Alex Lazary, who recently I became friends with through the campaign when you ran in the primary last spring. Was it last spring?
Yeah. No, you ran. No, 2022. Yeah, it was about, I think we ran for close to 18 months.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
I was very happy to see you get in. I didn't know you, but from looking at your ads and your background at the time, we needed good candidates to run, and I was very happy.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of the podcast and really excited to be on.
Thank you. So tell, how did you end up here? Where are you from?
So I was born in New York, went to college in Pennsylvania, went to UPenn, then went to business school at NYU, and then right after college, I worked at the White House. So I worked for President Obama in the White House for Valerie Jarrett, who was a senior advisor to the president. Mm-hmm. So I worked for her chief of staff as his deputy. Did that for almost 2 years and then went to business school at NYU. And then after that, our family bought the Milwaukee Bucks. That was about 10 years ago.
You're ready?
So 10 years ago, came out to Milwaukee and it's become home. This is where, me and my wife and my daughter live. We're raising our kids. And this has become, a place that we can't imagine living anywhere else. Milwaukee's really been such an incredible city with such incredible people who have really taken us in and has made Milwaukee home.
Well, and you've brought a lot to Milwaukee with your family and with that whole Bucks area, the way that's all built up now and the success.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things when we first bought the team was, making sure that this was more than, just basketball. We wanted to make it, as more than just a sports team. And when we saw the opportunity to build not just a new arena, but kind of help redevelop downtown. We saw it as something unique. You look at a lot of other, a lot of other cities and towns. You don't kind of have that opportunity to be able to redevelop 30 acres of downtown. And so, we were excited and humbled by that potential. And what we wanted to make sure we did when we set out was make sure that we were building something that was going to be able to not just be a place for basketball games, but kind of the new living room for Milwaukee, a place for people to, live, work, and play, for tourists to come and, kind of be the next destination for, you know, sports, entertainment, and just hanging out. So we made sure we built it, you know, 100% union, paid a living wage, and we're really proud of the work we were able to accomplish. 80% of our materials for Fiserv Forum were sourced right here from Wisconsin. So, you know, we were able to, I think, build a real, not just an arena, but, you know, create kind of the model, I think, for, you know, how these public-private partnerships should go in the future.
When the time came to run for public office, what made you decide to do that?
You know, I had always been interested in public service and serving. You know, I think, you know, something my parents had instilled in, you know, I think all of, you know, me and all my siblings was, you know, this notion and need to make sure that you're giving back. You know, my dad immigrated from Morocco. So he came to America when he was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. And, you know, they, you know, kind of left the, you know, Jewish quarter of Morocco, you know, settled in West Hartford. And my dad always says that this is the, you know, greatest country in the world because his story could have only happened here. You know, someone who came to this country with nothing, didn't even speak the language, and was able to end up becoming an NBA champion. And that's something that can only happen here. And he always said, you know, you owe it to give back. And for me, public service was really that way. So, you know, for me, whether it is working in government or the opportunity to run, I wanted to make sure that I was giving back and always focusing on that. And so I was trying to figure out what is the best way to, you know, to make sure that I'm having an effect and an impact in the community. And what drove me to run for office was I really wanted to see more people in Washington who had a history and record of getting things done. I think a lot of times we elect people who are really good at talking about issues, right? Or, you know, will quote unquote fight. But I wanted more people in Washington who could get results. And, you know, more people like Tammy Baldwin, who are workhorses, who are going to go to DC and work with people to deliver real results for the people of Wisconsin. And I felt like I had a history and a record of having done that, of creating thousands of good paying union jobs right here in Wisconsin, of being a leader in the community, and thought I could bring those skills and experiences to Washington. I was really proud of the campaign we ran. We fell a little short, but that was really what drove me to run.
What was missing in, you know, running against Johnson? I mean, what did you see wasn't happening that really meant was important to you?
Look, I, you know, Senator Johnson, I just think is someone who was constantly given a disservice to the people of Wisconsin. I don't think he's representing us. He's not representing our interests. You know, the way he's voting, I think, is on the wrong side of where the people of Wisconsin are and what they want. And quite frankly, he hasn't done anything. And I think that was one of the biggest problems. You know, even before he kind of became a Trump apologist and an insurrectionist apologist and you know, working to overturn the election and all that, he was someone who I thought just didn't do anything. And when you're in Congress, you are one of 100 people, right? When you're in the Senate, you are one of 2 people representing the people of Wisconsin. The problem that I found was we only had 1 U.S. senator, and that was Tammy. And I thought, well, look at all the stuff Tammy's been able to do as one person representing Wisconsin. Imagine what could happen if we had 2 people representing the state of Wisconsin. Imagine how much more money we could bring back. Imagine how many more jobs we could create. Imagine how many more businesses we could have invest. More people would come back to move here. How much more our state could grow. That was, you know, what I've kind of found, you know, Senator Johnson just hasn't done for the people of Wisconsin. And it's why, you know, I felt that, you know, I could be the one to beat him. We fell a little short, and, you know, Mandela ran a great campaign, and, you know, sometimes, you know, we just fall a little bit short in these elections.
Well, oftentimes in elections, it gets so ugly and so dirty. And when it got toward the end of the Democratic primary, one of the things I was so proud of is that when it was time to bow out, people bowed out. And if I remember right, you said you either had to go negative or bow out. And
yeah, one of the big things that I made sure that our campaign was we were not going to tell people why not to vote for someone. We wanted to tell people why they should vote for us. And if we couldn't win that way, then we weren't going to win. And that was really the hallmark of our campaign was, hey, and I felt honestly of the entire primary. You know, there were, you know, a few candidates who, you know, were going negative, who were at the bottom, but I thought the people who had a real chance to win, I thought we all ran in kind of a similar thing. You know, me, Sarah Mandela, I thought all ran as, hey, this is why you should vote for us. And I think at the end of the day, our view, and especially mine, was we are trying to beat Ron Johnson. We are not trying to beat each other, right? We are trying to beat Ron Johnson and bring another Democrat to help be a real partner for Tammy. And when I realized we couldn't win the primary, I didn't care if it was a day before the primary, a week before, whenever. When we realized that we couldn't win, I wanted to make sure that we gave who was going to be the nominee the best chance to succeed. And I thought we were able to do that. We got out a week before the primary, endorsed Mandela, made sure the field consolidated around him. And I was really proud of the race we ran. I was really proud of the race Mandela ran. And you know, unfortunately came up just a tad bit short, but, you know, that's politics.
So you're not one to sit around. So what are you doing now? Did you start a PAC?
Yeah. So right now, I've got a few things going on. I'm the co-treasurer for the Democratic Governors Association. I was just elected as a DNC member from Wisconsin. So I'm one of four DNC members, me, Martha Love, Andrew Werthmann, and Janet Bewley. So I was just elected as one of the four members to represent the Democratic Party of Wisconsin to the Democratic National Committee. And I also started a PAC that is working to help get mayors and county executives, Democratic mayors and county executives elected across the state. And our first cycle, we played in three races, Green Bay, Racine, and Stevens Point, three incumbents, and all three were reelected. And so we were really proud of what we were able to help accomplish there and the help that we were able to bring to those very important races who had mayors in Corey Mason, Eric Genrich, and Mike mm-hmm. Wizza, who have all accomplished things and who all have a real record of having gotten things done. And you know, once we were able to, again, you know, our ads that we, you know, that we did, we're telling people why them, right? Why, again, why you should give them a second term, why they deserve to continue to be your mayor. And we saw significant swings once we were able to, once we went online. And so, you know, we'll be doing that again. We're choosing our mayors and county executive races for this coming up cycle. But the whole reason I started the PAC was I wanted to be able to make an impact. And I didn't want to just start a PAC for the sake of starting one. I wanted to do one if we felt that there was a real lane that we could play in. And during the campaign, I noticed that there's not a lot of focus on mayors and county exec races in Wisconsin. But those are the people who are implementing a lot of the policies. Those are the people who are taking the dollars that the state is sending our cities or the federal government is sending our cities and deciding, you know, what to do with it. And if we have good people in those positions, good things are going to happen. Bad people, bad things are going to happen. And for me, I wanted to make sure that we were able to either keep the right people in office or get the right people into office. And I think these mayors and county exec races are some of the most important ones.
I want to hear about the Democratic National Committee work. But before that, I just have to ask a couple questions. Like, the White House, what was that like working at the White House and how did you end up there?
Yeah, the White House was one of the greatest experiences of my life. And, you know, I didn't know if my professional history was just going to be downhill
after
from that because it was so much fun. You know, I was young. I was 22. You know, I You know, I think like a lot of people of my generation fell in love with politics from the West Wing and, you know, thought, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to be, you know, talking in halls and, you know, I was going to be, you know, Josh Lyman. It was going to be and Sam Seaborn. It was going to be awesome. And there were some similarities to the West Wing, which, you know, I found to be, it's a lot of people who are really committed and care. And I think that's one thing the show gets right, which is it's a lot of people working in government who really care about helping serve the American people and helping making sure that, you know, government is working properly and is working on behalf of the people. Not everything gets solved in 40 minutes, which, you know, is not, you know, which the show ends up solving. Not everything ends up going the way you want it to, but the White House was one of the greatest experiences I had. I got to learn from Valerie Jarrett, you know,
she's awesome,
incredibly strong, smart woman.
Smooth,
who, you know,
articulate.
I being able to, mm-hmm. you know, at that age, learn from her, see how she managed her office, see how she dealt with all of the incoming that she did and how gracefully she was able to do that. How she made decisions, you know, it was all.
What did you say about that? How did she? What did you learn about how to make good decisions?
You know what I found from Valerie was she was someone who listened, took in all the information, and also used her own moral compass and her experience. And at the end of the day, it was, you know, whether it was her call or what she had to, you know, advise the president on. Being able to see how she kind of was able to take and synthesize differing opinions, mm-hmm. differing ideas, not trying to sway a debate one way or the other, but actually take in that information, match that up with her experience and her knowledge, and then match that up ultimately with what she knew the president might want and what she had heard from him, was just a really great experience to be able to kind of, you know, kind of see up close and learn from. And I've tried to take a lot of what I learned from her, you know, into not just my professional life with the Bucks, but, you know, then when I ran for office and helping run and helping bring the Democratic convention here, a lot of those skills were developed from, you know, the few years I was able to work for Valerie.
That's amazing. You know, that highlights what I believe is that making a difference is more in listening than telling. Mm-hmm. If we want to pull together to get things done, it's not about me. When I ran for public office, knocking on doors and telling people, well, this is what we need to do. It was knocking on doors and listening and saying, hey, I think the system's broken. What is it you want done? You know, what is it that you care about? And even people that wouldn't agree with me were quite surprised that I was willing to step back and listen. They'd be, you know, they were Republicans. I'm like, well, that's okay. What is it you care about? I'm not shutting the door here. You know, we can build relationships.
And that was something, you know, I was able to take from her, was didn't matter who it was. And something, you know, I've been able to take from Tammy, right? Tammy will talk to anybody. Tammy will, you know, if you live in Wisconsin, you're a constituent of hers, she's going to fight for you. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you voted for her or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Tammy has done such an incredible job of growing her coalition. I think same thing from Tony.
And she's effective in Madison.
Right. She's effective in
Washington,
DC.
In D.C.
And that helps. And same thing with Tony, right? Tony, you know, won by a point his first time and grew that coalition.
I knew.
Won on a landslide victory by 3.5 the second time.
I know.
And I think that those are two lessons we've really got to learn from Tammy and Tony is, look, what they did was didn't just sit on their laurels. They grew their coalition. They grew their base. They grew the people who are voting for them. And that's what we need to do. And I think when you look at, you know, some of the campaigns that we need to really emulate, I think Tony and Tammy are two of the best.
So you've been involved in the Democratic Party for years, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, it's, you know, how I grew up. You know, my parents started by, you know, when I was young, I had to have been 10, 11 years old. You know, my parents started doing, you know, some work for President Clinton, then Vice President Gore, and on. And, you know, they had always been very active in the Democratic Party. You know, me being a bit of a mama's boy, wanted to, you know, kind of follow in my mother's footsteps. She used to run the Eleanor Roosevelt Legacy Society, which helped get women elected. So she was a big person there, and kind of seeing all the work that she did. And then when I was in college trying to figure out what I wanted to do, you know, I didn't want to go study abroad. So I told my mom one day that there was this semester in D.C. you could do. And I just kind of floated it. I was like, yeah, you know, it's interesting. And she was like, oh, you're going to do it. And I was like, okay. Well, I don't know. Like, and she was like, no, if you're not going to, you know, study abroad, you're going to take this time and go to D.C. So I got to intern for Senator Schumer and, you know, really got to get immersed into what politics is like and the good that you can do when you have the right people in office and the right people working there. And that set off my, you know, kind of love and interest in politics.
And in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I wasn't very involved. I didn't have that same experience growing up. And mine was quite opposite of that, you know, so coming from a divorced family and, you know, it's a lot of crisis, not crisis really. My grandparents were there for us, but my mom just wasn't involved. My dad was non-existent. So I had the opposite. And yet when I married Phil, he knew there was a assemblywoman he was really good friends with, and I ended up helping her out a campaign. Hmm. And that was my introduction. And she was so dynamic. And I was like, you know what? I think I could be like that. I mean, I had no degree, couldn't type. I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. So I was way back there. But it took that influence of somebody who was doing it. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into the polls to vote for the first time. And I didn't know what county people, I didn't know any of those elections. So I just bullet voted for her and the president's race. And that was the start of my like awareness of, you know, politics and the, you know, watching her. That was cool. She could get things done too. She could get elected as a Republican in a Democratic area at that time. She was Republican. Well, they were different back then, Alex.
Just a little.
Quite a bit. So anyway, but it was when Phil was paralyzed, and that's where we were facing a lot of challenges. And I ended up eventually getting on the school board and getting all the schools in Oshkosh. And that was a big undertaking. It took years. But once I realized, hey, this is how you get things done. I mean, I was miserable for 2 years. So I tell my listeners, if you're sitting there and you're miserable about the state of politics, find something to do and it'll change your attitude. Get in there, run for office.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Humanitarian needs in Gaza are escalating as Israel intensifies its attacks on Hamas. CBS producer Marwan Agul is there.
Not enough water, not enough food, no place to sleep. It's not healthy at all.
President Biden and Egypt's president spoke and agreed to increase aid into Gaza starting today. The United Auto Workers Union has reached another tentative deal with an automaker. UAW President Sean Fain.
We reached a tentative agreement with Stellantis. Today is the 44th day of our stand-up strike. We called it the stand-up strike as a tribute to the sit-down strike, which built our great union almost 90 years ago.
Former Vice President Mike Pence has dropped out of the race for president.
It's become clear to me this is not my time. So after much prayer and deliberation, I have decided to suspend my campaign for president effective today.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The city of Waukesha is getting parade memorial work done for free. The city has partnered with VJS Construction Services to oversee construction of the parade memorial at Greedy Park, with the business providing some of their services at no cost. The city is seeking additional contractors who are willing to contribute in-kind donations for various aspects of the project, such as concrete work, electrical, landscaping, and more. The dedication of the parade memorial at Greedy Park is planned for 2024. Oconomowoc police have wrapped up their active shooter training at a school. This morning, they worked with fire crews at Meadowview Elementary and tried to warn people in advance to not be alarmed. The decision to hold the training comes in the wake of a recent incident in Germantown, where police had to use lethal force in response to an active shooter. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bird on a Wire, hosted by Civic Media. We are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. And I thank you to our listeners and to our producers for making this happen. We are talking today with Rebecca
Alwyn,
and we have Barbara Park, no S. So tell me, hope, civility, and action.
Okay.
They think they have something for me here.
Well, another group effort song from our Raging Granny Gaggle. It's got, I think, 5 verses of this is more than enough, Barb.
Yeah. Do you want to skip one?
I'm a little nervous about this, but okay. It's something about civility.
Well, you can just cut us off.
Okay.
You,
yeah.
Okay,
and
I'll cut you off.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And this is typical of picking a common tune that everybody knows.
Okay.
So.
This land is our land together, and when we share it, it just gets better. When we look out for our friends and neighbors, that's what America should be. This land has people of all religions, we're all Americans. Beneath diverse skins, if you wear headscarves or hold a rosary, this land was made for you and me. This land is queer folk and newly here folk, female and male folk, dark skins and pale folk, with our commitment to love and liberty. We'll remake this land for you and me. From many countries, we brought traditions, and we can share them here in Wisconsin. For we're together in peace and harmony. This land was made for you and me. This land holds some truths to be self-evident, that inequality is un-American. We live together and we can all be free when this land achieves its destiny.
Oh, that was great. That's a great segue, and it made me think of what I did today. Today I was down here in Madison with the Moms Demand Action Group. It should say grandmas too, right? Grandmas and Moms Demand Action for the common sense gun controls that we know would save lives. You know, we're living in a climate now where people don't feel like their schools are safe. They don't feel like their communities are safe. You know, even on the highways sometimes you're not safe. There's gunfire and then they have to shut down the highway. So, you know, the violence part has got us all concerned. So I was here and it just feels so good to walk into the Capitol and to be able to have a conversation with my legislator who beat me in the last election. And we can get a picture together and we can smile together. And he signed on to 3 different bills. Gun control. He's the only Republican that signed on to 2 of them. And one of them is the Extreme Risk Protection Act. So having a relationship with him where we can talk, and we did that right after the election. I had a person that I met, a woman, a mom, right? It's a mom. And she said, let's meet with Bob on gun control issues. So we did that. We pulled together and had a meeting with him back in November. Just being in the Capitol today, feeling like I don't look at a person as a Democrat or a Republican. I look at them as a person. And I think people care. I just have that belief inside of me that people just care. And if they care, we should be able to build a relationship, right?
We hope that our music does help build a relationship. And I brought along a song that I feel like I'm a little nervous about doing it because we haven't done it very often. It's not one of our easiest songs.
Okay.
But before we sing this song, pretend that we're holding up the sign, and we actually do have this sign in real life that says, caution, sarcasm ahead.
Oh, I love it. And can we dedicate this to my nephew and his family? He took his life in May with a gun that he shouldn't have had. And it's just been, it's awful to become a survivor of gun violence.
Painful.
It's painful. So to my family and to anyone out there who has suffered, this one's for you.
Just remember that caution, sarcasm ahead.
Yes, it's very sarcastic. Okay. Concealed carry law lets me hide it in my bra. It's my gun, my gun. Nothing you can do, cause I'm stuck like glue to my gun. I'm sticking with my gun like sugar to a bun, like birds of a feather we stick together. I'm telling you from the start, I can't be torn apart from my gun. Concealed carry's great if your heart's filled with hate. It's my gun,
my gun,
my gun,
my gun.
If my mind isn't sound, no one checks my background. It's my gun,
my gun.
Don't want to hear any talk of limits. Don't want reform or even permits. I don't know how to use it, but I never want to lose it. It's my gun. As a matter of opinion, I think it's fine. This little piece is mine, all mine. As a matter of taste, I think it's good. Guns all over my neighborhood. Nothing you could show would make me say no to my gun, my gun. Nothing you reveal could alter how I feel about my gun. It's fundamental to my honor. The law says carry, and I'm gonna. You best be believing I won't soon be leaving my gun.
Wow. That was
sarcastic.
Sarcastic and good and made you smile. And it's a song we all know and love.
It brings up a few points.
It sure does. I'll talk about those now. Yeah.
Well, things like people that are so identified with their guns that they really passionately rebel against any gun safety legislation.
Any reforms, permits, anything. Yeah.
Right. That's right. So we can get these things changed, I believe, by getting more people involved in finding avenues. So your grannies, so tell me, how many grandchildren? We have to talk a little bit about our children and grandchildren. Right? How many do you have, Rebecca? You wanna...
I have 8 grandchildren, okay. Which sort of continues to surprise me. I gave birth 3 times. I have 3 adult offspring. I don't call them kids. I call them my offspring. And 8 grandchildren ranging from 22 years old to 5 years old.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. And how about you?
I always say I helped to raise 4 children. And among them, one has a daughter. And then I have another essentially granddaughter who's actually a cousin, but she is a granddaughter of my heart.
That's great. And I have 3 grandsons. They're 11, 9, and 6, and I'm with them every day. I go over there and take them to school, and it keeps me young. But they're also the reason that I want a better society for our kids and grandkids. They're so important.
Absolutely.
To us. And everything does revolve, when you talked before about education, that, you know, the fact that our schools are underfunded, you know, we need to speak up for that, because it's not about choice. It's about children and them getting what they need in our schools, right?
Well, and when you think of guns and remember when we were kids, at least the 2 of us are older enough, or I'm old enough that I can remember having to go face your locker and in case there was a nuclear bomb, like that was going to really help you. Whereas now the kids have gun drills, active shooter drills.
They do.
So, but I think it's much more in their face than facing our lockers with or hiding under your desk, which is what we had to do in the 40s and 50s.
It's really heartbreaking when you hear teachers and children talk about having to go through those drills, those active shooter drills, those just-in-case drills, and that this issue has come into our children's lives in the way that it has.
We have a heartbreaking song on that, but unfortunately we didn't bring it.
It's okay. Not really a great song for 2 people to try to sing.
Okay. And it definitely isn't funny. I mean, you listen to it and you want to cry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll save that for another day. You said something earlier, Rebecca, about the lines and how we don't have fair maps, and that some of this stuff isn't getting changed as a result of that. And maybe talk a little more about that. I couldn't agree with you more. The power, voting power has been taken away because of this, right?
Absolutely. Right. I would never, ever tell anybody that their vote doesn't count, but it seems to count far more in a few places than it does in many places across the state. What gerrymandering has been done for decades and decades, but we didn't have computers with software programs enabling experts to do it in as extreme a way as it's been done for the last, well, let's not even 2 decades. I'm going to say the last 12, 13 years. Right. What happened in 2011 is the Republicans brought in an expert from out of state who brought his software programs. They huddled in a law office across the street from the Capitol, and they kept moving the lines to make sure that some districts were packed. So they're packed with as many Dems as they can pack into one district, so those Dems can't counterbalance Republican votes in other districts. And then in some of the districts, they did this based on people's previous voting history and on organizations that they belong to. You know, these days there's not much privacy left online. And so there's a huge amount that's known by many individuals. And so what this software program allowed them to do was draw lines so there would be just enough Republican votes in a lot of districts that they'd get, oh, you know, maybe 54%, 56% of the vote in the district. And then, you know, it's an all or nothing thing. It's like the people that voted for Luann don't get represented this time around because Donovan got more than 50% of the vote. And that's happened in a lot of districts. And so they've done purposeful cracking, which is drawing some really weird boundary lines to make sure that there are just enough Republicans to carry a district.
In the good news department, that is at the Supreme Court level right now. And it's
the state Supreme Court.
The state Supreme Court is looking at a lawsuit challenging the maps again. So it's possible that could get changed pretty soon because people want to be involved. And their vote should matter. Their vote should count. And the evidence, and full disclosure, I'm a member of the League of Women Voters for 30 years. And, you know, they do good at doing their research and taking positions based on data and what's going on. And it's pretty easy to know. I mean, everyone can see this, that 50% on statewide races, they're very close. And yet the legislature, that building I was in today, 60% or
more
than 60% are Republicans, and only about 30 or 40% are Democrats.
It's a good demonstration how skewed things are.
So skewed.
Well, and the results of that, for people that have been paying attention for more than a decade, is that we have legislators who feel no need whatsoever to listen to their constituents.
That's right. There's no need to, because they have the lines drawn to protect them.
Right.
You know, when I ran, it was such a weird, they gave us half of Greenfield, half of Greendale, and this little slice of Milwaukee, and then Hales Corners. It's just, how do you build community that way as a legislator? It would be difficult to represent Milwaukee and the suburbs, you know, and the different needs in those communities when they should have drawn those lines so that it encompasses as much of a community as it can.
Right.
So there's part of fairness there, right?
Well, and part of the fairness is elections really should be conversations about what the people in the state want or what the people in that particular district want. Elections should be about conversations. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't just be about who's got the biggest pot of money and who's got the most control as a result of the gerrymandering. And we want to bring back competitive districts. The fact of the matter is, in Wisconsin, Republicans are probably always going to have a little bit of an advantage because Democrats are a little bit concentrated in the more urban areas. But those more urban areas include places like Green Bay and Eau Claire. It isn't just Madison and Milwaukee, but we really want competitive districts so that our elections mean something.
So how does someone become a part of the Raging Grannies?
Well, ask.
Just ask.
They go to our website.
Go to the website. Okay.
And there's a way.
Google it.
and they email me, actually.
Okay.
And one other granny. We get the mail. And and then we write them back and tell them when the next rehearsal is, how to get in touch, how to connect with us. And
all of us have talents out there. And I know when I ran, Chris Porterfield was, by the way, thanks to Chris for the song that's part of our podcast. He organized musicians to put concerts on in and around my district. They were called Birdsong concerts. It was really fun. And then at the very end, they did one at the Cooperage event called We May Well Be the Ones to Turn This World on Its Ear. That's how it went. It's an old song, but they did a great job of using their talent to promote my campaign. And mostly I think they were promoting civility and hope because they want things to change, and so do I. So if you're listening out there and you have some musical talent, find a way to plug that in. Is there only one Raging Grannies in the state?
No, there's a Milwaukee Raging Granny.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to look into
that. There are some women in Sheboygan who have appeared and as their identity, Raging Grannies of Sheboygan. We had a few Northwoods grannies, but they just didn't hold together.
Yeah, I think there just wasn't a critical mass.
Right, because it does take time. We have two.
You have to practice.
Yeah, and we have two regularly scheduled rehearsals a month. And then every so often there are those weeks when we might have two gigs where we appear in addition to, whatever.
Right, right. The schedule can get pretty heavy sometimes.
Yeah, it does. But, it is such an energizing, empowering experience, as Barb said. It's really important to be part of a group. So whether you can sing or play the guitar or play the ukulele, find a group of some sort.
Those are popping up everywhere, and this is a great way to sort of close out this podcast, because we've talked a lot about, I've talked to lots of different groups, like the Purse Sisters in Wauwatosa. That's a group that meets and every week, and they write postcards and they make phone calls. And then there's this Motherhood for Good group that sort of got behind Mandela Barnes. And then when he lost, they just changed their name, and they're 10,000 strong now across the nation. These young moms that are very busy. And so I do think there's comfort in numbers and there's power in numbers. And so finding your place to plug in is just sing. What the heck?
And we're always looking for new grant. Every new granny brings something to the group.
Yeah, well, that's that grandma thing too, right?
Can There's I plug the... our website?
Absolutely. What's the website?
The website is Raging Grannies of Madison.
Okay.
.org, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And your next performance is?
Well, in Darlington on the 26th, do we have anything on the calendar before we're singing there? Farmers Market in Madison.
This Saturday.
Yep, this coming Saturday.
At 10 p.m. At 10 a.m.
10, yeah, 10 a.m. it'll be a little dark.
No, 10 a.m.
we sing at the corner that's across the street from the Park Inn and the Old National Bank. We're on the square. Those are just across the street.
Well, I will share with you, it's very easy to join them in singing because they're songs we all know. So, well, thank you very much for what you do every day. Thank you for coming up and talking to me at the convention. And thank you for coming in today to do this. And we are actually in the studio in Madison, so I'm with all these great folks that sponsor this program. So thank you all so very much. And to all of you out there, I hope you continue to stay involved or get more involved. And singing is just another great way to do that. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Luann.
Thank you.
Listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
Discover the secret to a healthier you at Lake County Botanics. Vape Walkie specializes in top-quality hemp products from CBD to Delta 8, all curated just for you. You'll find Delta 8, Delta 10, THCA, and more legal hemp compounds in disposable vapes, cartridges, edibles, and more. Isolates, broad-spectrum, or full-spectrum CBD, they've got it all. They even have products for your furry friend. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 to 7, and Sundays from 11 to 5. Mention this ad to get a free gummy at 215 Oakton Avenue, Suite C in Pewaukee. LakeCountyBotanics.com.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Wendy Gillette. Losses are growing in Gaza. Palestinians are digging through rubble after intensified Israeli attacks. The Hamas-led Gaza Health Ministry says the death toll there has passed 8,000. CBS News correspondent Charlie Daggett from Tel Aviv.
Former Vice Prime Minister Tzipi Livni.
What does Gaza look like after a ground invasion?
Well, I think that we should think about it right now, not to wait until the end of the ground maneuver operation. Look at the situation and think not just about the next day, but about the next year, next 10 years. Think about the future. Now, it's clear, should be clear, Israel doesn't want to reoccupy Gaza.
President Biden and Egypt's president spoke and agreed to increase aid into Gaza starting today. Now that the House has a new speaker, Congress can get back to business. Funding needs are a top priority. Congressional correspondent Scott McFarland.
Speaker Johnson said he'd like to split aid for Israel from aid for Ukraine, which puts immediate aid for Ukraine in a fragile position because there are dozens of Republicans who oppose it. He'd need a critical mass of Democrats to support it then, and bills with a critical mass of Democratic support is one reason why there's no Speaker Kevin McCarthy anymore.
There's one fewer Republican candidate for president.
For former Vice President Mike Pence and his Republican presidential nomination hopes,
it's become clear to me this is not my time. So after much prayer and deliberation, I have decided to suspend my campaign for president effective today.
From his former boss, Donald Trump, a bit later, also in Las Vegas.
I had a great, successful presidency, and he was the vice president. He should endorse me. I chose him, made him vice president. But people in politics can be very disloyal. I've never seen anything like it.
Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
In Mexico, the death toll has risen to 43 after Hurricane Otis battered Acapulco. Fans of the TV show Friends are mourning the loss of Matthew Perry. CBS's Christian Benavides.
In his later years, he starred and served as executive producer of the CBS revival sitcom The Odd Couple and gained a new legion of fans as Friends was streamed by a whole new generation. Perry was 54.
A win for Arizona over Texas in the World Series.
2-2. Shot to third and caught. Rivera's got it, and game two goes to the Diamondbacks in a resounding way, 9-1 to tie the series up.
Fox Sports with the call. This is CBS News.
Eggland's Best. The only eggs with more fresh and delicious taste, plus superior nutrition, because the way we care is anything but ordinary. Only Eggland's Best.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. and click on the Careers tab.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in,
Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere.